This morning, I want to share on a subject that we haven't talked specifically on in the past, although we share this on a monthly basis. But I want to talk about the call to supper. Now, how many remember when you were a kid, especially we're coming into summertime, and I remember the summertime, back in the day, we were outside all the time. That's changed a little bit sometimes today, but it's still the case in many families. As kids, we were out playing in the yards and running the streets, and you had your friends that around the neighborhood, and I think our family for 3 generations all lived in the same neighborhood. We were all grew up, myself, my mom, and other cousins and uncles and everyone over in North El Centro, over in the around the railroad tracks from El Centro Avenue up to Scott and Stacy, and we had family on different corners, and so we were just out always playing. But there would always come that time where you'd get that call to supper. Okay, come on in, you need to come eat. And, you know, sometimes it's like you didn't want to come in, but I don't want to, you know, come in, we're too busy outside. There's like, you need to come in for supper. And I used to always love it because, of course, I grew up with my mom, but she was not the cook. So it was a good thing we lived with my grandma and grandpa. So grandma cooked, and of course, there was always, oh man, you loved to come to supper. Because supper meant, whether it was chicken and noodles, homemade, we love those, or it was, don't even have them anymore, but black-eyed peas and cornbread with the ham hock and the bacon. Oh, man, it's like your mouth waters. Okay, when you hear that call to supper, there's something in you. Okay, I'm hungry. I've built up a hunger from playing outside so long, and there's this supper, and then I can go eat supper and then get back out to playing. But this call to supper many times was something that just made your mouth water. You loved that. It was a great time. There was meaning in that. And that was back in the day where that call to supper was family time. It was something that we enjoyed. It was a great time that made a difference in your life. So I want to talk about that because I believe that God is no different. In fact, that is the heart of God, is the same life and joy of life that we experienced as a child. And so when we talk about the Lord's Supper, it is something that God wants to put in us, that same feeling of anticipation that when we hear the call to the supper table, to come to the Lord's table, that it brings back the same meaning, that same anticipation, that same feeling within us of contentment, of safety, of home. That is many times when we think of home, we think of supper time. When we think of that longing for belonging and for just that peaceful sense of life is right, we think of those supper times. It also reminds me of this man who was afraid that his wife was going deaf. You know, he's like, you know what, I've been noticing some stuff that my wife just isn't hearing like she used to. And so he called up the doctor. He said, you know what, can I bring her in to do some hearing tests? And just, you know, because I'm just concerned. I want her to be able to enjoy life and hear me. And he said, well, I'm busy. I can't get you in for a couple of weeks. But let me give you a couple. This is some simple tests that would give me some information that you could do to kind of see where you're at. He says, every now and then, when you're about 40 feet away, talk in just a conversational tone and see if she responds. And if she doesn't respond when you're about 40 feet, you know, move to 30 feet and then 20 feet and then kind of gauge at what point she can hear you and responds to you. he says, okay, that's great, I'll try it. And so one night, you know, he noticed he was in the living room and she was in the kitchen making dinner, and through the doorway he could see her there, and it was about 40 feet away down the hall there. And so he was sitting in his chair there, and he said, honey, what are you making for dinner? Just in a common way, see. And he listened. He didn't hear any response. So he got up and walked to the other end of the room, and he said, so honey, what are you making for dinner? Heard no response. So he walked into the kitchen, right at the edge. He was about 20 feet away from her. He said, honey, what are you having for dinner? No response. He's, wow, this is worse than I thought. So he walked right up to her about 5-10 feet away from her, and he began to shout, honey, what are we having for dinner? She turned to him with a look on her face and said, chicken, 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 the same as I have said for 5 times now. Apparently it wasn't her that was going deaf. And again, it's the same way with the Lord. With the call to supper, many times we're saying, okay, God, what are you making for me? What do you got for me? And you know what we say? No response. And many times we go through the motions and we just feel like it doesn't mean anything because we are not hearing. And yet it's not God that's not responding. Many times when we come to the table and we come to church and we hear the messages and we go through the motions, sometimes we just feel like it's dead. But yet it's not God that has stopped hearing. It's us who has stopped hearing the call to supper. We've become spiritually deaf. We've become spiritually numb to what this means. And so today I just wanted to take one Sunday and just really focus on what is the Lord's Supper and what is God calling us to? What is the call of the Lord's Supper that we need to hear? And there are 6 calls and 6 meanings and purposes that he wants supper to take in our life as we come and celebrate this together. So let's read together in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and this is kind of other than the mentions in the gospel of the Last Supper. Jesus himself came to Paul, and even though Paul was not at the Last Supper with the disciples, we still call Paul a disciple and an apostle of Christ because we know that Christ himself came to Paul and gave him the story of his time on earth. And so when we read Matthew and Mark and Luke and John, we're hearing the accounts from the actual disciples who walked with him. But when we read the messages from Paul, we're hearing it straight from Jesus because Jesus himself gave Paul the message of not just the Lord's Supper, but many other things. And so we're going to read his account of this in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, starting in verse 17. So let's pick this up together. Paul says, but in the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, it is not for the better, but it is for the worse. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and I believe it in part. For there must be factions among you in order that those who are genuine among you may be recognized. For when you come together, it is not the Lord's Supper that you eat. For in eating, each one goes ahead with his own meal, while one goes hungry and another gets drunk. Do you not have your own houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I commend you in this? No, I will not. For I receive from the Lord what I also deliver to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And in the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. And whoever therefore eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty concerning the body and the blood of the Lord. So let a person examine himself, and then so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself. That is why many of you are weak and ill, and some have died. But if we will judge ourselves truly, we would not be judged. But when we are judged by the Lord, we are disciplined so that we may not be condemned along with the world. So then, my brothers, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that when you come together, it will not be for judgment. And about other things, I will give you directions when I come." So in this message that Paul gives them, as we read this, he lays out six purposes and six things that Jesus wants us to hear when we come to the Lord's Supper. There's six things that we are called to as we celebrate the Lord's Supper. And many times, sometimes we've kind of twisted these things into our own meaning, but we need to look at it, what Paul is saying, what Jesus is saying to us. The first thing, and it's probably the one that we know the most, is that when we come to the Lord's Supper, we are called to remember. We are called to remember. The great thing about celebrating communion is that we remember what God has done for us. Now, there's really two things that we need to remember. The first thing I think that we put on the back burner, we don't remember, but we have to remember, is we need to remember our need. If we don't remember why Jesus did that, it loses its value. You know what we need to remember? We need to remember that we were lost. We need to remember that we are separated from God. We need to remember that we have messed up this world, that we are broken, and all of us are. We need to remember that it says that no one is holy. Not one. Even the best person, it says our righteousness is like dirty rags before the Lord. So we need to remember when we come before him that it is in brokenness. But we also remember that Jesus, seeing our brokenness, does not condemn us, but that he came and was broken for us. We need to remember that our salvation, that our adoption, that our acceptance is not based on what we have done, but on the great work of Jesus. We need to remember that he suffered for us. We need to remember that it was not just a simple sacrifice, but that it was agony, and that this was valuable, that this was God himself. The blood that fell to the ground was not just any common person's blood, but it was the very creator of this universe, the one that loved us the most, gave everything he had. We need to remember. You see, we need to remember the price that was paid for us. We need to remember the love that was given to us. But only when we remember who we are, that I don't deserve it, that I am broken, that I'm the one that called the need for Jesus to give himself. And so it is a sober thing to truly remember, but yet it's an exciting thing. It is something that fulfills us when we remember the value that God puts on us, which is amazing because we have no value. Now, we get prideful and we think that we're something that we're not. And yet, God values us enough to give his son to die, to be broken for us. So we need to remember. Jesus said, as often as you do this, you do it in remembrance of me. I don't want you to forget me. Remember me. But not only that, it says that when Jesus came to the supper, before anything, it says that he gave thanks. Not only do we remember, but we take these elements, and when we celebrate this, it needs to begin to stir up within us such a feeling of gratitude. Do you feel thanksgiving? Are you, when you come to supper, is there a feeling of thanksgiving? I am thankful for this. Just like that dinner that our mother or our grandmothers put before us, are you thankful with every bite? Man, this just hits the spot. When we begin to understand what God has given us, we need to be thankful. We need to be filled with the warmth of gratitude. God, let me not ever take you for granted, but let me always give thanks. And not just with my words, but with my life. You see, thanksgiving is not just an attitude or a word, but it is a determination. In other words, God, I will show you my thanksgiving by living this out. But it is through thanksgiving that we begin to experience the fullness of communion. Are we thankful? Is it a thanksgiving that almost brings us to our knees? See, sometimes we have thanksgiving as if it's just a simple, oh, thank you, I just love that. But that's not the thanksgiving we're talking about. We're talking about the thanksgiving when you were this close to death and someone saves you. You're still shaky. Have you ever been something where you've experienced something on the freeway and something happens and when it's over, you're like, am I still alive? And when the realization hits you, you almost lose control. You're so shaking, but there's a thankfulness. Oh my goodness, thank you that I'm still here. That's the type of thanksgiving. It needs to be a deep core response of thanksgiving to God when we understand what he has done for us. Well, not only remembrance and thanksgiving, the third thing that we are called to is it says that every time you eat this, you proclaim the death of our Lord Jesus. You see, when we take communion, there's a call to proclamation. In other words, if we truly understand the supper that we're taking together, how can we stay quiet about what God has done for us? Because God says, I have children that are lost. You are the ones that are found. Will you not help me to bring in the lost sheep? We need to proclaim the death of Christ. We need to, it needs to be something that is so filled in our heart that how can I not give the good news? How can I not proclaim that we are set free? That it's not anything that we can do, but don't you know that Jesus has paid it all? We need to begin to be determined that when we celebrate communion, it puts within us a desire to proclaim Jesus to this world. It is also the way that we proclaim it to the next generation. As we bring up our children, as we share this, that this is not just a ritual. Many times we fall into that and we need to be careful that our children do not just see us going through a religious ceremony. When we take communion or when you talk with your children about communion as they do it in children's church, and I thank God for that, but we need to proclaim to them that this is because Jesus died for us. And even as children, they may not always understand, but it grows as we proclaim it to them. And again, not just with our lips, but with our life. Brings us to the story of there was a young boy that was with his mother in church, and he happened to be sitting in church with her that Sunday, and they were having communion, And she was telling him a little bit about what it is. And, you know, she asked him, you know, do you believe in Jesus? Have you asked him into his heart? And she said, yes, I have, Mom. She said, okay, then you can take communion. And so they went through the process. And, you know, when he said, eat the bread, and she said, well, you know, this represents Jesus. This was his body that was broken for us. And so they everyone ate, and it was quiet. And after the little boy ate, he said, Mommy, my Jesus is stale. And that's okay, in his not understanding of the unleavened bread and everything. But we, even in those things, and we don't want to condemn our kids. In fact, it is in those things that they learn and grow, and we proclaim Jesus to the next generation. So we need to begin to let this communion build within us a desire to share it with others. I know many times, like growing up, if we're playing out in the yard, or if friends were at our house, how many? And we probably all did it when they called us up. Oh, come eat with us! And half the time, you know, you didn't tell your mom, and it's they just give you that look. Okay, how many are coming over tonight? Don't worry, I'll go to their house next week or whatever tomorrow. We want to bring our friends to supper. There needs to be a desire to proclaim Jesus, to share this, that this supper is good. Come eat with me. Come share the food that God has given us to fill those parts that regular food cannot fill. We need to invite and proclaim Jesus in everything that we do. Well, the next step of that, we see throughout this proclamation that Paul says that the fourth thing that, and this is why we call it communion, is that it is a call to community. Everything about the Lord's Supper is about community. Everything that Jesus did was like family. He never called an individual. If he did call the individual, it was for them to come and join the family. Communion is something that shows us, when we take communion, that we are not alone. We are part of a bigger plan. We are part of a body. We are part of a family. And that's why throughout this whole thing, Paul's condemning them. He says, because when you're coming together, you know what? You're going through the motion. You're doing it yourself. One person comes early and he takes communion, and then he goes home. He says, that should not be. Because what good is it for you alone? The whole purpose of this is to understand that we are part of a body. So therefore, wait for one another. Understand and discern that Jesus died not just to forgive you of your sin and not just to save you from hell, but he died to make us a family. You see, that's the other purpose, because sin had torn us apart. Sin is what puts within our eyes these blinders that we see color and we see status, and there's you against me, and all of these barriers that we have raised up amongst ourselves. Well, that's not fair. Why is that person getting this? And we all have we have tons of things and biases that store up between us. And you need to understand that the whole reason that Jesus died was to melt those away. Because yes, we may disagree with one another, and we may have issues with one another, but those are nothing compared to understanding that we are one family. And we'll work those out, but never let those things separate us, because Jesus died to make us one. In fact, it says throughout the New Testament that it says that God has taken from two men, talking about the Gentiles and the Jew, and he's made one family. And now that two men is we can really expand that to whatever thing that we put in, whether it's ethnicity, language, color, status, whatever. It's the same thing. God died to break down those barriers, to make us understand that family sees past those things that we don't agree. He's not saying that we're not going to have disagreements, but you don't let those things separate us. because we are family. And so when we come to church and take communion, it's the greatest reminder that we are spiritually family. That we can sit next to someone totally different from us and say, in God's eyes, we're back together because of what Jesus did. It is because of the cross that we stand together, knowing that this is our theme this month on missions, that it's every nation, every tribe that's going to stand before God together, and we're going to sing the worship and glory to Jesus. So we need to let communion, every time we celebrate this together, we need to let those things go and begin to join together. We need to understand that this church is more than just a club. It's more than just a community center where we just come and do it. This is meant to be something where we give ourselves to one another. You see, Jesus said, I've come to build the church. And the church is going to come against the gates of hell. And if we are ever going to come against the gates of hell in this world, we need to understand that we cannot be individuals. You cannot come in this church and then walk out and just do your own thing. We need to, at some point, decide that I am going to be part of this community. And what God is building here, I'm going to be a part of. And then we, as this part of the community, we join with other parts of the community and other churches. And together, all of us become even a stronger church together. So every time we take this supper, we are called to community. The fifth thing is, we are called to examination. It says, every time you take it, it says, let each person examine their heart. Now, this one has been twisted. I know growing up and in different times, I've had friends that said, oh, I'm not going to take communion. Because it said that if you take it wrongly, that you're eating and drinking damnation unto yourself. And I know that I'm not really right yet. When I get right, I'll take communion. You're missing the point, what he's saying. He's not saying examine yourself, and if you're not perfect, don't take communion. In fact, it's just the opposite. All he's saying is when you take communion, examine why you're taking it. Examine your heart and see where there is problems. And then you take communion knowing that Jesus died to help transform you. When he talks about us taking the communion in an unworthy manner, he's talking about the person who doesn't even care about changing, who has no intention of serving God. And if that is the case, and you have no care about even looking at yourself to let God do a work in you, then you are in pride spurring what God did for you. And so he's saying, examine yourself. In other words, be so thankful, be so remembering of what God has done, that in your thanksgiving, in your remembrance, in your community, you examine your heart and say, man, I need to work on that thing. So therefore, I want to take communion. I want to honor Jesus who died to make me better. In fact, it is because I am broken that I take communion. And so we don't say, oh, I don't want to, I'm afraid of that, because it's in that humility and that judgment of ourselves that we actually eat life. We acknowledge the life of Christ, that he is there to help us change. He is there to transform us. So we don't need to be afraid of the communion. In fact, if we examine ourselves, if we say, Jesus, show me what I need to work on, then there should be a desire to celebrate together in communion, because Jesus desires you to have a greater life than you've ever had before. But you simply have to be willing to let him change you. So that's what that examination is. Are you willing to admit that you're broken? This is the greatest thing that we can do, is say, you know what? I'm struggling with something. I'm struggling with community. I'm struggling with remembering who I am. I'm struggling with thanksgiving. Then Jesus says, then come. Then come to supper. Then come and celebrate together, because as soon as we admit that, God is able to love us. He's able to put his arm around and says, that's okay. If you just let me Just let me walk you through the journey. That's all I desire. And so that is the examination that God asks us to look within our heart and say, God, I want to be more like you. Forgive me for those times that I've done that or for what I'm struggling with. I'm not there yet. So therefore, I can come to supper. I can come to dinner dirty, walk in wet, and yet your mom, your grandma, your dad is going to say, come on in, sit down, and let's have supper together. Are we willing to examine our hearts? And then finally, the sixth thing, and this is the awesome thing, the final thing is, as we take supper, it's a call to anticipation. You see, when we're called to supper, it is a call to look forward to Jesus coming back again. Because he says, as long as you take this, you are proclaiming it until I come again. And then he is going to have supper with us himself. We are going to be invited to the actual supper table of heaven, where we are going to join together, and with Jesus himself, we are going to eat and drink and laugh and cry in ways that we did with family. How many know when you get together with family, you usually talk about the same stories over and over again, and every time you laugh at it, even though some of the stories at the time were not very good. But how many know later on with family, you can remember that and it's like, okay, it's great now. There's coming a day when the things right now that are not too great, we're going to sit with Jesus and we're going to laugh. Oh my goodness, you brought me through it though. We anticipate that. So when we come to supper, we are looking forward to that time when Jesus is going to once again invite us himself to sit with him and family at the supper table. Are you anticipating that? When you take the bread and the cup, are you thinking, oh, Jesus, one day you're coming again. I'm going to honor you until you come. That is our hope. That is our joy. Because then all our struggle will be over. It says that he will wipe every tear from our eye. No more pain, no more sorrow. Oh, we look forward to that. And that's why we take communion, to remind ourselves Jesus is coming again. This isn't going to be forever. Your storm will not last forever. It may seem like it right now. But that's why we take communion, to remind yourself and to remind each other that God is at work. And he is not going to let us fail. He's going to bring us through. And so it's a call to anticipation. It's a call to talk about what's coming, to encourage one another with those remembrances. And as we do that, it fills our heart with joy. So today, are you hearing the calls to supper? Are you hearing the call to remember? Let's remember who we are and what Jesus did for us. Are you hearing a call to thanksgiving? Are you willing to give thanks to God from the bottom of your heart? Are you hearing a call of proclamation? I want to share this. I want to share it with others. I don't want to just come to church and then walk out and forget. But let this remind me to go out and share what God has with others. To make the call to bring others home with you, to bring them to supper. Bring your friends to supper. Are we hearing the call of community? I need to remember, it's not just about me. I'm not in this alone. I need to connect with others. That it is what Jesus did for me that gives me a family. Are you hearing a call of examination? Is the Holy Spirit touching your heart today? Is there something in you that you need to say, God, yep, I need to work on that. Maybe I haven't wanted to look in that. How many know that there's things that we know are there that we don't like to look at? But Jesus says, that's okay, we need to pull it out, we need to look at it, and I'm going to make you better. And then are you hearing the call of anticipation? Maybe you've been struggling. Maybe it's just hard, you're wanting to give up. You need to hear the call just a little bit more, and I'm coming again. There's a day coming when it's all going to be over, so hold on. Just keep looking up, and God will make it all right.